Good morning, everybody. It's June 2nd, 2020. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is K-12 Education Talk Radio. We appreciate you listening, be it live or on the archives. As you know, we archive every show over at education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. That's our website. And we put a new schedule up there on Saturdays, and we tweet at EduTalkRadio and link in over at Larry Jacobs and Facebook at Larry Jacobs and EduTalkRadio. If you want to friend us or follow us or link with us and all that, we hope you do, because you'll be able to see all the stuff we're doing. We also have our equity website, which is it's ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. We're going to talk a lot about equity today. Our website over there features our online journal, AC&E, all about equity and access, pre-K-12, and just tons of information for pre-K-12. On equity, ace-ed.org. We're going to talk a lot about this today. My guest, thank you, AASA, the School Superintendent Association, particularly Jimmy Minicello. Thank you, Jimmy, for bringing us Louvell Brown. Louvell is a very, very popular superintendent these days, okay? He's probably got a big smile on his face as I said that right now. I'm so thrilled he's coming on the show, because all I hear from people is, have you met Louvell? Have you met Louvell? Do you talk Louvell? Finally, I got Louvell on the show. Thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Louvell. He's the superintendent over at Ithaca, New York, home of Cornell University. And he's just a good guy. He's an expert on SEL, social emotional learning. I know he knows my friend Shelly Berman regarding that. And Louvell, welcome to the show. It's Larry.
Oh, and Larry, thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be here. And I am smiling. Thank you.
My honor. And you, I tell you, everybody I talked to, have you met Louvell on the show? You know, you should really get Louvell on the show. So I got you. We got you. Thanks, buddy.
Yes, awesome. Okay.
We're here. Hey, you know, we planned this show, and I want to just tell everybody, Louvell's an author. I have the name of the book right here. Wait a minute, let me find it. Culture of Love, Cultivating a Positive and Transformational Organizational Culture. He's written that. You got school culture, obviously. You might want to listen to that. I know he does a great job at Ithaca, all right? And we planned this show all about equity and all that. It was bad enough when we just had the pandemic and remote learning to worry about and all that. And then the horror of Mr. Floyd's death and all that has happened in the last week. I mean, it's just brutal. I just want to – it's on everybody's mind, all right? And I'm not going to go through the usual cliches. It's a horror show on every aspect of it. It's a horror show. Yeah. But so your school's still in session, right? You're still in session, right?
Yeah, no, our building's closed, but education and teaching and learning has continued, for sure. And we all have a heavy heart right now, for sure.
Yeah, everybody does. It's just a terrible, terrible thing to witness, first of all, and be part of and see it all. I'm, of course, seeing it on TV and all that, but it's pretty gruesome and understandable. It's all about social justice. And I imagine, Louvell, I just want to talk to you about this. This has probably come up. And again, you're an expert in social-emotional learning. And you describe your district, then talk about, has this come up within within what you're doing with remote learning and all that? I'm sure it has, because school's going on. But just speak on that side. So I want to talk about the social emotional side of this and how we deal with this as educators when we're doing remote learning. It's such a mixed up mess right now. So many challenges. So Louvell. Almighty superintendent of Ithaca, home of Cornell. Is that where you graduated?
Yeah, thank you. I'm a University of Virginia grad, but I love being here in Ithaca, New York, the home of Cornell University, two great college towns I'm from and connected to. Thanks for asking about social-emotional learning aspects. That has been something that we've integrated into all that we do, and we've been very careful to make sure we – do not disconnect social-emotional learning from the social-political context our young people are growing up in. So, too often people have equated social-emotional learning to smiles and grit and perseverance without having deep conversations about the issues our young people are facing, particularly our young people of color and those living in poverty. So we've done much to have conversations about race, have conversations about injustice. The way in which to get young people to be in control of their social-emotional health is to give them power and control over their situations. And we cannot do that unless we have these hard conversations about the oppressive systems that our young people are attempting to navigate each and every day. So it's hard to do, but it's a must-do if we're going to really be serious about the social emotional health of our young people. And that's continued during our school building closures. We call families every single day. We connect with our young people. And our first question, the most important question, is how are you doing? What resources can we connect you to? And we're processing these most recent murders that have happened in broad daylight for everyone to see. So, yeah, it's important to us.
We're all processing that. And, you know, literally, I want to ask you this literally. When you talk to children, how many kids are in the district?
About 6,000.
About 6,000.
Yeah.
And I've been to Ithaca. It's gorgeous there. It's a beautiful part of the world, beautiful town, obviously, college town, et cetera. And Ithaca College is there as well. Okay. What's the demographics of the Ithaca School District, if I may ask?
Yeah, we're very diverse. We have an equal mix of rural, urban, and suburban. We have about 14% Hispanic, Latino, 10% African American, about 15% Asian American. So we're very diverse, diverse school district, which is a beautiful thing to have.
It sure is. So when you talk, this is what I wanted to ask you. When you talk, when you sit, we talk to people every day. What do you need? How are you doing? Et cetera, et cetera. Do you mean that literally? Is there someone really connecting with a kid personally every day? Just talk about that for a second.
Yeah, so it's either an administrator, school principal, myself, a teacher, an aide, a support professional. So now we have multiple adults who are making sure we're connecting to our young people, irrespective of where they live. We've gotten internet access out to families who didn't have it before. We're feeding thousands of young people. We serve tens of thousands of meals. So now our roles now, I keep hearing folks say that schools have closed. Buildings have closed, but the work has continued.
Education continues. Yeah. And the social aspect that you were just saying too. It's amazing. And by the way, I forgot that, and I was thinking of Ithaca, which I've been to, and of course it's a rural area of New York, but Ithaca itself is a great college town. Where you said it was rural, and then you said that even around Ithaca there are families that don't have internet, which just struck me as you said that a few moments ago. That's just amazing. Okay, so with all of this and these crazy times, what's the message that you're giving to the school community right now, or what's the message you're receiving from them? Just let's talk about messaging for a second.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously in the midst of a crisis, a global pandemic. And what I say to folks is you learn a lot about who you be. When I say be, I mean B-E. And that's much more important than what we do, D-O. And we've talked about how we're going to be a culture of love. We talk about what love means. That's why when we closed our buildings, the first thing we did was reach out to families to make sure they were okay. We checked to make sure they were connected to resources. They had food in their homes. They had internet access. We weren't quick to shuffle out a bunch of worksheets and worry about grading or attendance. We are going to be a loving community first. And you learn a lot about yourself in the midst of crisis like these. So throughout this process, we've used it as an opportunity to double down on that effort to be a loving place. And it's also given us an opportunity to be innovative. You know, we've struggled with standardized assessments, our state assessment tests, giving those each year. We've struggled with the ways in which we've had to grade. We've struggled with the ways in which we've been forced to take attendance, seat time requirements. All those things we've now been able to look at and take a more loving and student-centered approach to. No one's talking about attendance right now. No one's talking about how we're going to grade and hold kids accountable. We're actually focused on the learning and the love and the relationships that we now must cultivate with each and every family and every young person. And that should be who we be. And that's much more important about what we do first.
It sure is. And what you're going to find, I will bet you dollars to donuts on this one. Okay, you're going to find that the kids are going to learn. Let's not worry about grades. These kids are going to learn. And you know why they're going to learn? Because, and I'm going to use two words you used, is a love of learning that has been instilled, I hope, via the good work of all the educators, et cetera, the staff, et cetera, over in Ithaca schools. Okay, and the kids, in spite of what we do, the kids are going to learn from all this. Okay, they really are. And they're going to do just fine, but we just got to keep up our end of it. And I love what you said, beginning the schools are not closed. They are not closed. The school building is closed, but the school, the learning is still open. Okay? It's just that simple. when you talk to your fellow superintendents, Lavelle, and I know you do, you were, as I mentioned, you were a keynote speaker. I think Shelley was there too. You know Shelley Berman,
yeah.
Right over in Andover?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, Shelley.
I did.
He's a good man. Okay, and another SEL guy like you are. Okay, mm-hmm. And you served as the keynote speaker. As you talk to your fellow superintendents, okay, through these times of crisis, okay, and I remind every superintendent, everybody listening, you're not alone out there. Okay, everybody's facing the same challenges, maybe on different levels, but the same challenges. What are you hearing from them?
Yeah, and I've been asking them to do this, and they're doing it. They're reflecting on, you know, how they've been complicit in our systems. Many of our systems that have been oppressive. I know we're going to talk about equity, but, you know, when I just mentioned a few. Our attendance policies, yes. Our rating policies, all those systems we know have not benefited all young people. And so I see superintendents across the country, and I'm urging them to think about how they have been complicit in these systems, and now what kind of conflict must they engage in to disrupt these oppressive systems. That's
mm-hmm.
where we need to be. We have the sense of urgency now. We have the crisis now. We have the time now to really reimagine what we do. But we can't reimagine what we do until we reflect on how we've all individually been a part
mm-hmm.
of the old approaches. So that's where I hope many of my colleagues are going to be now before moving on to changing policies and the conflict. We've got to really figure
yeah.
out where we are and what we've been doing to contribute to this.
Yeah, and you know it's interesting you said it that way, and you used an interesting word, quote, we are all complicit in this, which, by the way, I
mm-hmm.
agree with you, but complicit is a very strong word, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And yesterday, and it's a good word, and yesterday I was talking to a superintendent on the air. His name is Trent Bowers. He doesn't know you. He's in Worthington, Ohio schools. He's a great
mm-hmm.
guy, and I hope you guys
awesome.
Can connect.
Awesome.
I'm going to send him this show when we're done. He's just a wonderful guy. And he was saying how this pandemic and, of course, the social protesting, I'll say right now, in the wake of Mr. Floyd's death, okay, kind of peeled away layers of an onion to him, okay,
mm-hmm.
and how he can't – he's a white guy, and he can't put him – it's hard for him to put himself into the shoes of a black person right now, okay? And
yeah.
then he started to talk about how he realized – again, complicity is a strong word, but he began to realize that of all the African-American people he works with, he really doesn't know them that well. He knows them professionally, okay, and I'm sure he likes them, okay, but he doesn't know them that well. And he was speaking of that from the heart, that he's going to try to make a real change, okay, in himself to better understand people, which, of course, will reflect down to the teachers, to better understanding of the students, et cetera. You can't put in yourself in somebody else's shoes completely, but understanding is the first step. And when you said the word complicit, okay, and again, you know, we put that word into context, what did you mean by that? We are all complicit in this. Was it like what Trent was saying?
Yeah, I mean, and thanks for sharing that story. And you're mentioning an outstanding educator who's one of the top leaders in our nation, and he's even recognizing through his self-reflection his lack of a connection and understanding of the kind of culture, the different cultures that exist in these spaces. As an African-American man with a lived experience that, you know, growing up in Central Virginia in a very rural community, navigating these waters and systems all my life, I see and
yeah.
feel that kind of oppression every day. Folks rarely know me, and rarely will they take the time to get to understand where I'm coming from, which then translates into my classroom experience. Just imagine sitting in a learning space every single day, and when you look around, nothing represents your culture. And you find yourself all day, every day, for years, attempting to assimilate, to navigate those waters that are so, so different from your lived experience. And then you
mm-hmm.
have folks tell you that you're part of a quote-unquote achievement gap because you're not performing yeah. to the dominant culture as you should be. So that's where I've lived all my life. And the best educators, i.e. one you just mentioned, are saying now that in the middle or the end of their careers, I never understood those children. So that's where we are right now in public. Our system has been designed to work exactly how it's working. It was never designed to meet the needs of the kids of color and those who have been traditionally marginalized in this country. And that is just the culture that exists. So I'm hoping that our industry, our educators, are reflective like the gentleman you just mentioned. You know, I didn't know them. And now I wonder why they rarely achieved in my space. Because we all know, I think every educator would say, you have to know someone, and they have to know that you care before they will learn. So how do you show that you care? How am I going to understand or believe that you care about me when you have no understanding of my lived experience whatsoever? I hope this is making some connections for you. But, yeah, what you're making is going back to complicity. In an implicit and an explicit way, we've all been guilty of not knowing our children and not designing our learning experiences, spaces, assessments, grading practices in a way that will meet their cultural needs. Yet we then say we can't figure out why we have the kind of achievement issues and gaps we have in our spaces, in our country right now.
Yeah, and this whole thing, the pandemic and then the social upheaval of the last week has really peeled away a lot of layers of the onion, if I may. And we really have to take a step back and, if I may use the analogy of a tunnel, come out at the other end much stronger than we are now. And it's amazing. Yeah. So let me talk about – let's swing that over, if I may. And I don't know if you heard me earlier. We're very interested in equity. All right. I am the president of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, ace-ed.org, my friend Louvell, and sign on with us. Okay. And let's get your voice over there, et cetera. Please do. Okay. See our magazine, et cetera. Equity is a key word. And I'll tell you a funny story. Of course, we have advertisers in our magazines. Okay. And on our website. But I only let the companies on and the services on that are really interested in equity. And every single person I'm talking, that's a top thing. That's what we always talk about. That's all we care about, equity, equity, equity. And I look at them and I say, okay, what are you doing regarding that? And many of them look at me like a deer in the headlights. Okay? It's a great buzzword. It's a great buzzword. All right? I'm trying to go beyond the buzzword of it. Okay? And I force my clients, the advertising folks, to tell me what they're really doing. All right? Same thing with the school districts. It's top of mind for every superintendent. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you, Louvell. I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
Not start with you. You're just going into the group. We talk about equity. I know you believe in that. Talk about Ithaca equity and what you hear from others around you.
Thank you so much for acknowledging that it's become a buzzword. In addition to being this wonderful community in Ithaca, I'm in spaces all over the nation, and I find that many people don't know what equity means either. And what I say it is, and what we do here, equity is about reducing the predictability of who succeeds and who fails. We look at our data. We look at our data historically. You can pretty much predict who's going to achieve in our schools. And quite frankly, those kids who look like me, those kids who are growing up in poverty like I did, typically don't achieve. And so we need to change that. And there's a number of ways to go about it, in looking at the ways in which we assess, providing more access to opportunities. It goes on and on. But we know until our data changes and we cannot stop predicting who's going to achieve and who's going to fail, we haven't gone after equity. Equity is also reducing and interrupting the reproductive practices that negatively affect young people from diverse settings in our school settings. We know implicit bias, the lack of culturally responsive teaching practices, the ways in which we segregate and isolate young people based on what they look like, where they come from, what zip codes they live in. We know those practices that we've been reproducing in our countries and in our schools over and over and over again are leading to inequities. We need to interrupt that. And we all know what we should do to do that. Equity is cultivating the unique gifts and talents of every young person. See, I see right now happening in this country, we are doing some amazing things to innovate. We're going to have computational thinking, computer science classes going in ways we've never done before, amazing technology tools in the hands of young people. But what I fear is going to happen is those new experiences, those blended learning experiences that we've been working so hard to engineer, they're going to be reserved for those who have privileges. And those who are coming from marginalized communities are going to face a diagnostic assessment in the fall to determine that they haven't met grade level standards. And then they're going to be put in remediation courses, and we're going to be reproducing the same old stuff we've been doing all along, hoping that they'll, quote unquote, catch up. See, if we're truly serious about equity, we got to cultivate the unique gifts and talents of every young person. Make sure all those kids of color are in your highest level courses or getting the STEM experiences that we know are outstanding. Make sure every kid is doing project-based approaches to teaching and learning. Make sure every kid is solving a real-world problem that's relevant to their local community. Those great experiences that we've engineered needs to be available for everyone, not just for those who have the privileges. So, again, when I think about equity, I think about it in those lenses. And when I ask folks about what they think about when they think about equity, and they'll give me some random buzzword answer, I'll say, so what part are you working on?
Yeah.
What part of equity are you working on? Is it one of those three that I just mentioned, or are you just reproducing a buzzword hoping that it's going to impress me?
Right. It's cool. So let me ask you this, and you're on top of this, okay? So I'll put you on the spot, go dig a little deeper. Ithaca, okay? That's where you're superintendent, Ithaca, New York. And by the way, great town, everybody. You didn't hear me mention that before. It really is a cool place right on the Finger Lakes.
Awesome.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. High above Cayuga's waters, if I may, but that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay, Lake Cayuga, Finger Lakes, whatever. But seriously, in Ithaca, let's just focus on Ithaca. You just gave a brilliant definition of where you are. What are you doing? How are you leading, okay, them, your people in Ithaca, your educators, your staff, et cetera, through your community, let me put it that way, through this? What are the concrete steps you're doing?
I'll give you some examples. The learning targets for us and the guiding questions and principles for us this year, you know, we're identifying ways in which our organization has been oppressive. Boom. And that's taken a lot of self-reflection, and it's pushing us to look at everything we do, every single policy, including code of conduct. We're revising our code of conduct because we know our code of conduct has contributed to inequities and, quite frankly, has resulted in young people of color and those living in poverty being suspended far more greater at a greater rate than other their white counterparts. So we're identifying those oppressive systems, and we're changing them. We're holding one another accountable for engaging in the conflict that's needed to disrupt oppressive systems. We do self-reflection at the beginning of every one of our meetings where we ask one another, what conflict did you engage in today to disrupt these inequities? We talk a lot about love and liberation. We've defined what love is. We've defined what liberation is to give our young people voice and choice. Our young people are part of everything we do, every policy that we change, our systems, our structures, our course redesign efforts, our technology implementations are informed by the voice of our young people. So those are just some examples of the voice and choice, the policy work. Our Board of Education has started with policy number one, and they're getting through the entire policy manual, looking at it from a lens of equity. And as we see the words that produce inequities, they jump off the page of our previous policy. So we're just changing them. So a lot of work. I've been here 10 years now, and we're 10 years in, and I think we're finally starting to hit our stride.
Isn't that amazing? 10 years, and you're finally hitting your stride. I love the way you said that. And let me ask you this, and you're using, again, which I love, a lot of strong words. You're not beating around the bush. You used the word oppression a few minutes ago, all right? And I love that. You're not beating around the bush with the words. You're saying it kind of like it is. But how are the teachers reacting, okay? And how the community's catching on, okay? Talk about the reaction of the community, the reaction of the educators to these types of policies and how you guided them through that.
I've been here 10 years, which I got to say, most folks who use the kind of words I'm using and are about equity in the kind of ways that I'm doing it don't survive very long.
But I wasn't going to say it. So, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I think the length of my tenure is one quantitative and qualitative metric to show that people are – reflecting enough and engaging in enough conflict, constructive conflict, to allow for me to continue to lead this conversation. So because it's a process, and I outlined the process in my book, where we reflect first. You can't skip steps. If you try to quickly go to policy changes before you have a reflection approach to why we do the things we do and how we've all been complicit or not complicit in it, and then engaging in serious conflict that's facilitated and constructive versus being combative. See, the conflict is inevitable. The combat is optional. So I have been spending my 10 years engaging in this kind of reflective conflict process that then leads to us changing policies. So people have bought into the process, and it's been hard. You know, I had a lot of hair when I started this job. Now I'm a bald guy. You can't see me right now. But so it takes some time. It takes some time to do this. And it takes a lot of perseverance, but I've been doing it a while, and we've made some significant changes over the years.
Be glad you're bald. All the hair salons are closed, so no problem.
Yes, good thing.
You're lucky in that regard. I mean, it's amazing what you have done, what you still have to do. And now that all this has happened, and I'm talking about the social upheaval of the last week, all right? Mm-hmm. And, boy, this has been social upheaval, all right? And yes. I don't know where it's going to lead us, okay? I hope it leads us in a positive direction. God only knows. Right now we're in the midst of it. All right, and it reminds me back of when Martin Luther King died, the terrible riots and that kind of stuff. Okay, and we do somehow survive this, but we have to make some changes. What's the next step in light of all this? Okay, if I may. Okay, for leadership in leading the school district through this, especially in these nutsy pandemic times.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting us to be bold. I'm very hopeful that we're going to use this opportunity to address the inequities that have plagued our schools for centuries. The next step is going to be reimagining public education. If we do not provide more voice and choice to parents, families, and students. As of right now, our parents are the primary educators at home, and they are getting a behind the scenes look at all that we do. They're going to require and want more access and more innovations than ever before. We're going to have to deliver on that. We're going to have to be able to provide an experience that can be blended at times, an experience that can be completely virtual at times, an experience that can be completely in-house in the bricks and mortar building at times based on parental preference and need. We are going to have to shift to provide multiple pathways and opportunities for our families because that is going to be what people are going to require. So that's going to require a significant amount of leadership and talent and time and perseverance for us to do. So, again, we are in the midst of a significant evolution of our industry, and it's going to need our leadership and our ability to facilitate conversations more than ever.
Wow. I think it'll happen. I think we're really going to make a big difference everywhere. Oh, yeah. What do you think?
It's happening right now. I'm just excited and enthusiastic about what I'm seeing from my colleagues all over the nation and our amazing teachers. So people are doing it. It may take time.
Wow, that's a good thing to say.
Capacity. Yeah, it's going to take time. And we're also in the midst of some significant budget challenges all over the nation, too. So we're going to have to navigate the resources that are dwindling at the same time doing more with less.
I think we could do it. We're pretty good. Just remember, everybody, schools did not close down. Everything closed down, but not schools. Okay, we continued. Let's do a shameless plug for a second as we wind down. Culture of your book. Who published your book?
A small publishing company, WGW Publishing in Rochester, New York, published it. Yes.
Okay. But people can get it, I guess, on Amazon. Am I correct?
Yeah. You go to Amazon. Look up Culture of Love. Louvell Brown, it'll show up, and I would love for folks to read it and let me know what you think, for sure.
Culture of Love. And by the way, I don't know if you wrote it this way, the subtitle, Cultivating a Positive and Transformational Organizational Culture. Did you mean that just for educators or for in general?
No, I've been somewhat surprised by how often folks from private industries and other organizations outside of schools have picked up this text. So, yes, it's an approach to developing positive and transformational culture in any organization, the self-reflection, the conflict, and the policy behavior shifts that are needed to take place. Anyone can use that. So, it's been picked up by probably as many folks outside of education as in education.
It's Culture of Love, Cultivating a Positive and Transformational Organizational Culture of Love. All right. And give if you can, because this is going to be important now as we – hopefully swing back into on-site school or however this is going to shake out in through this year and in the fall. But give us one good example of something that happened. Now, we'll use Ithaca, okay, as an example, your district. One cool thing that you remember about building a culture of love that can just be something solid we can pass on.
Yeah, thank you for asking that question.
You're welcome.
Something, every year school districts all over the nation get their data back. Hopefully they read it. But I know folks in the community are reading it, and they're using that data to judge more so than learn. Our approach to being trusting, committed, truthful, patient pushed us to rethink how we look at school data. So when our data arrives, and we have, you know, the annual data, we have the quarterly data, when we get that, it's a partnership with our community, and we have a self-reflection conversation about what is this data saying, why does it say this, and then we get into the conflict. So what must we do to make needed shifts? What must we do to continue these positive trends? And then we talk about the policy and structural and system changes that need to be in place in order for us to sustain momentum or to change some negative trends. So, again, the culture and those principles associated with the culture have driven everything we do, including how we look at data, which went from being on the front page to judge schools and compare schools to one another to now being a community conversation about what we can do to learn versus judge. So that's just one example. I have dozens of them, but yeah, that's just one good one.
But I just wanted to transfer one out there so they can get a sense of what we're talking about. And last question, which is I'm finding this is crazy and fun. Obviously, you got 12th graders ready to graduate. What's graduation going to look like this year in the year of the pandemic?
Hey,
Ithaca, New York,
everybody. Proud to get on with you. And if you know Ithaca, New York, we have an amazing view of the lake. I was just down this morning as we had individual graduates in their cars, getting out of their cars, walking across a stage with the principal, social distancing, of course, with their caps and gowns on in front of the lake. We're filming each graduate in a very personalized way to put together a production with speeches and every graduate walking across the stage. So in some ways, it's more personalized. We're talking to each graduate as they graduate. It's more beautiful. It's outside in front of our lake. But the actual ceremony, when put all together, is going to be virtual. So we have to be safe, but it's a way to honor our young people.
Oh, it's great. And what's going to happen is as these kids in another 20, 25 years, when their kids are graduating and their kids are going nuts with their graduation, they're going to be able to say, well, do you see when I tell you what happened during my graduation? This is going to be a very special memory. Okay. And all the school districts are coming through with this and honoring their graduates. In just crazy times, okay? But we're getting through and we're doing well. Louvell, you know you're coming back on the show in a couple of weeks. We're going to continue this conversation. Is that okay?
All right. That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Okay, man. It's going to be wonderful. And you're really doing a hell of a job there. Keep up the good work, my friend. 10 years in, you're out of hair, so just keep on working.
Thanks so much for the opportunity today.
Thanks, Louvell. You take care. Have a good day. Enjoy the nice weather.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Right. Take care. Bye.
That was Louvell Brown, everybody. He's the superintendent and very well known these days. Just a great guy. First time I met him. He's Louvell's superintendent in Ithaca City School District, Ithaca, New York, right on the Finger Lakes, Lake Cayuga, high above Cayuga's water. It's where Cornell is. Okay. And Ithaca College. I don't want to leave the great soccer team out there. Okay. Ithaca College. So it's really a beautiful part of the world. And he's just doing a great job of getting the word out. His book is Culture of Love. We're not plugging the book per se, but why not? Culture of Love. It's on Amazon by Louvell Brown. And this was an AASA show, so thank you, Jimmy Minicello, and all my good friends over at the Superintendents Association. The superintendents are working so hard. They're going to be working hard all summer, too. We'll get this all together. They're doing a good job with the help of everybody who works with them and for them. Okay, my name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Please go over, check out ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Join our consortium with equity. It's more important now than ever. It's all free, and our magazine's over there, too. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.